rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, welcome to The Ruck. I'm joined today by one of the most prominent, promising young journalists. Also here is Will Kelleher. And one of the men who stopped being promising years ago because he's now in the point of fulfilment, the great Alex, my beard's real low. Gentlemen, Alex, I think you may have had a hard weekend at grafting. Yeah. Any enjoyment there? What were the highlights? What were the tough bits?
My sporting highlights were watching my kids play football a Saturday morning and Sunday morning, if I'm perfectly honest.
Doesn't that say it all?
Yeah. Obviously, I enjoyed watching France. There were moments at Twickenham which I did enjoy as a spectacle. It was pretty low grade, wasn't it? Two middling teams scrapping out a game. It won't be one that lives in the memory, unfortunately. It all felt like hard work for everyone.
Will, you're there to be our grafter and to find out all the news stories, the facts and figures, the stats, etc. Did you have fun finding them, or was it just a bit of a chore as well?
Well, yeah, it was interesting. There are plenty of nuances and bits and pieces that came out of England-Wales. And subscribers to The Times actually can enjoy some of the deep dive snorkel on stuff that we can do on the Monday Maw that will be coming out. If you're listening on a Monday, it'll
be
coming out this afternoon. Yeah, exactly. And one of them actually was that Mike Adamson and his refereeing team managed to waste 3 minutes of the game, which Wales might have done with at the end. But what I also wanted to say was it's been a good weekend to be a Kelleher with cousin Quiveen. Oh, do you see the pen? Amazing. For Liverpool in the League Cup.
So just to summarise, you didn't have a great weekend then?
Well, watching him, I did, yeah.
All right, okay. Okay.
You lay claim to be related to all Kellehers.
Yeah. Byron, he's in there.
Yeah. Byron. Yeah. Is Ronan your current favourite cousin?
Quiveen.
Quiveen's out there now.
Yeah. Okay. He's in the top three at least.
Hey, enough of this, or we'd have to go through all the Joneses. Alex, I don't really want to start about a debate about Twickenham with the referee, but Will did bring up the long gaps in play while we waited for something to happen. At the start, it was actually incredible. And you would have thought that the ref would have sorted it out before the game. This is what I want. But it didn't happen like that, did it?
No. So when I was writing about the break foot, the hookers issue, the axial loading thing back in November, I spoke to a lot of hookers who said, we know it's taking a long time, but we have to get it right. We have to get the engagement right. And we're effectively asking people to understand the need for the setup to be as it is. I get that. I think that's fine. The problem is that when the referee doesn't know what's going on and just resets and resets and then penalises one team and then changes his mind and penalises the other team, it just means that the front rows don't quite know where they stand. And it looked to me from the stands, it looked to me again on replay, like he just didn't really have a handle on what was happening, and that just that led to confusion, and it led to a whole load of resets and frustration among both teams, I think.
Well, at the end of the game, it's one of those things where you're on your deadline thinking, well, actually, the crowd really loved that last minute, the whistle, and the England won the game. There was a big crowd. They seemed to be in decent humour. Then 10 minutes later, you think, oh, yeah, but blimey, no tries. What was your overall view? I mean, you can get everything in the papers this morning and online from viewers and subscribers. You can get everything from utter rubbish to a great performance. Mm. Where was it for you?
I remember chatting to a mate going up to the ground, and I always have this thing with England where I feel like they've got the potential to really burst into life, and have done for a long time, but you never quite see it. And people pay a lot of money to go to Twickenham, some tickets up to £200 now.
Mm.
And I was thinking, if you went and you sat anywhere in that stadium, it would be a tense finale. You might have had a nice day, a few pints of Guinness and whatever else. But you come back and you just sort of think, I thought that this was this new attacking age of England. You saw a glimpse of it against South Africa. That was a really sort of, as Eddie called it, rope-a-dope, back-to-the-walls performance. But when you look at the spine they've got at the moment of Harry Randall, Alex Dumbrat, number 8, and Marcus Smith, if you were just looking at that on paper, you'd say, well, that's going to be a team that's born to run.
Mm.
And you just never quite see it. Like, the analogy I was thinking of is it's almost like, I'd never really been to a boxing fight before, but it's a bit like watching a boxing fight where you really are desperate for your man to knock the other guy out, and it just never quite happens. And it's a sort of on-points victory at the end, and everyone leaves a bit like, oh, I just wanted to see the knockout punch.
Mind you, I got home from Twickenham and did watch the boxing,
yes,
which was an unbelievable fight. And then the most staggering result at the end to give Josh Taylor that win. I am no boxing aficionado, but I watched that. I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant sporting contest.
Mm.
Second only to watching the DNA Elite under-10s play in Richmond. And then the points decision, like everyone in the arena, all the commentary team, both boxers really knew who'd won. And then the three judges gave it the other way. It was extraordinary.
Alex, you didn't do what Will did there. He included a Bruce Springsteen record in his his chat. Have you got one?
No.
Oh, well, it's no surrender from you then.
I might slip one in through the pod when I Google some Bruce Springsteen songs.
You can
songs
do that.
It's
got to be in the tip of your tongue. Okay, thanks, lads. Here's what's coming up on the podcast. We'll be having more chat on England and Wales. Was it great or was it terrible? And the rest of the Six Nations, obviously. Also, the Premiership, an astounding finish to the Championship, briefly. Also, Jess Hayden will be coming to us with her roundup of the Premier 15s. Before that, we're going to listen to one of the all-time great players and Lions turned outstanding pundits in Jamie Roberts. Jamie, not in his traditional seat of power in Cardiff, but down playing Super Rugby in Sydney. Jamie, could you just... You had 8 minutes, I think, of your latest burst of action. You played in so many wonderful places around the world, but now you've played for Australian Super Rugby.
Yes, yeah. So we've had two games so far. It was round two on the weekend. Unfortunately, we lost at home by a couple of points to the Queensland Reds. Played at the Leichhardt Oval, which is pretty cool ground, actually.
Mm.
And for some reason or other, I've managed to take the Welsh weather with me to Sydney. It's been absolutely lashing it down for the last week, and will continue to do so this week. So yeah, fascinating, really. The lads are having conversations out here about how to play in the rain. I'm their go-to man, I think.
I'm afraid...
I was telling them we have conversations back up north how to play in the dry. So, it's been good fun. It's been good fun, settled in well. And Super Rugby Australia, Australia, Super Rugby Pacific. We're playing all the Australian sides first, obviously because of the borders in New Zealand, etc. So that will change with the COVID stuff, but hopefully come April we'll be going out to New Zealand as well to play those teams. So
sure.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's good fun, and we've got a good group of the Waratahs.
You're the only man who ever left Newport to complain about the weather in Sydney, that's for sure. Jamie, Saturday's game, I just wondered, do you feel a little bit detached from it all, watching it in the early hours from, 10,000 miles away?
Yeah, I mean, detached, yeah, definitely. Look, I think it's one thing, you know, being here, you know, set my alarm for 3:42. That gives me 2 minutes to get upstairs and get in there before kickoff in the morning out here. And it is what it is. It certainly reminds me of international match day back home, and I do miss it. You know, whether that was as a player or as a pundit or as a fan, you do miss it. It's a massive part of the rugby calendar, isn't it? I think everyone involved in the game, whether that's, you know, player, yourselves as the media, or supporters, it's huge. And it is difficult. It's difficult watching it on TV, but there'll be Six Nations next year, mate.
Sure, absolutely.
It's only for this season. At the minute, we're planning to come home at the end of June after the Super Rugby season. So. But yeah, I definitely miss it when you watch it on telly and you feel you're the other side of the world, just to feel that buzz of being in a stadium like that, or, you know, whether, as I said, whether it's working in broadcasting or, again, you know, you certainly miss playing Test rugby. And I was just gutted. I think Wales, you know, they showed in that last, probably after 80 minutes, that last passage of play, they showed so much endeavour and resolve. You kind of just wish they did that from minute one. That line out cost them heavily, didn't it? You know, when it was in the game, and just a couple of early pens, you know, they're all the headlines this week. But
sure. That's
a game I think Wales will feel as a team. Although they lost, they've progressed since the Scotland game. I really think they have.
What about England? There's a big dispute going on over here because Eddie Jones is sort of baffling people by saying, look, we're only interested in the World Cup. And then some fans are saying, OK, it was a win. Others are genuinely upset with the way England played. They only scored one try. How did you see it from the England? Well, I wasn't going to say from the England point of view, but looking at England, how did you see it?
Yeah, look, and I know the World Cup cycles work as they do, and coaches, you know, whether they're employed for World Cup cycles, what have you. I hate it when international coaches say it's all about the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Because that pays a huge disrespect to the Six Nations. It pays a huge disrespect to the Test rugby that takes place, well, for 4 years in between World Cups. It's not all about the World Cup. It's about each Test match. Yes, there's a background plan, no doubt, that coaches have in place for, you know, their player planning, etc. But yeah, I really, really don't like it when international coaches come out and say, well, it's all about the World Cup. That really annoys me because, you know, each Test rugby match is a huge moment in itself. You know, for players, I think for players as well, hearing that from coaches, yes, obviously you want to peak for World Cups. You know you want to play in them, but they're a long time away. They're a long time away. It's about the here and now. It's about this year's Six Nations tournament. For these players, it's about what's coming in 2 weeks' time and the next game of the Six Nations.
On that note, you guys under Warren Gatland had a hell of a focus on the Six Nations each year, didn't you, and won plenty of them. If you were in the England side at the moment and you were someone like Ben Youngs or Courtney Laws, what would you be saying as the players when the head coach is like, oh, don't worry, we'll be peaking next year?
Yeah, look, I think as players, you're aware that the World Cup is a year away, and it's something every team wants to win. I'm sure England are desperate to win it. Wales are desperate to win it. Ireland are desperate to do well in it. As a Scotland, you know, talk about the home unions. Everyone wants to do well. But we'll deal with the World Cup when the World Cup comes around. Yes, there's planning in place, and there are, you know, succession strategies in each position. And, you know, no doubt coaches look at that throughout the four-year cycle. And that's great. But that happens behind closed doors. Yes, it happens through selection, etc. And players, I think when you're involved in Test environments, you're well aware of where you sit in the pecking order. If you're working with coaches that are honest with you, you know, players that are playing and starting for England now, when you look at your Don Brandt, Marcus Smith, these are players that a team like England will be building around, and they'll know that come World Cup time, yes, I'm going to be mid-20s, I'm going to be peaking, there's a great chance of me playing in that World Cup and being a big part of the side. On the other end of the spectrum, there are older players maybe in that squad who might be a bit wary, thinking, you know, unless I pull my finger out and keep performing well, the chances of me playing at World Cup might be quite slim. So, but that happens every World Cup cycle. And as I said, if coaches start harping on about saying it's all about World Cups, it just frustrates the hell out of me, because it pays a huge disrespect to all that Test rugby brings in between World Cups.
Jamie, hi, it's Alex here. You won't have been alone in setting your alarm for 3:42 a.m. to watch the game down in Australia. How many people do you think would have actually made it to the end? It's a rugby culture down there that wants entertainment and demands entertainment. And this was a game, particularly that first half, so many stoppages, so many scrum resets, which it does not help the flow of a game and certainly the spectacle of the game. And I just wonder whether anyone down in Australia would have actually survived through to the final whistle.
Yeah, well, we had a shed load of scrum resets in our game on Friday. I think it's a wider issue that the game needs to address. You know, if we are going to appeal to more fans and the game is going to grow, it's something the game needs to address. There's no doubt about that, because it just eats up the clock. It's desperately frustrating, isn't it? I think we all felt that in that first half. It just kills all momentum out of a game. And I think referees just need to be more decisive, quicker. You know, maximum one reset, and then you just make a call there. That, you know, don't ask me about scrums, mate. I have not no clue what's going on, as I'm sure neither of you have.
True. Okay.
But, it's frustrating. You know, we all want to see it. At the end of the day, we're in an entertainment business, and we want to see the game. We want to see an exciting game of rugby, don't we? And we saw that in patches in that second half of the weekend. But as you rightly said, that first half was laborious at times, and it was a difficult watch. But sometimes that's what Test rugby is like. You know, you've got two teams here who've won one and lost one, and are desperate to keep their chance of winning the tournament still alive. So, you know, the game was always going to be kind of that bit of an arm wrestle, wasn't it?
Well, an area that you know very well is the attack, and I wonder whether I could pick your brains on different ways of attacking the game. So we saw, as you said, that last sort of 20 minutes when Wales got front football, and Thomas Williams is injecting pace, and Biggar's playing flat to the line, and Faletau's carrying it forward. They stressed England and scored three tries. When England had a lot of ball in the first half, they couldn't penetrate Wales, just as they couldn't penetrate Scotland a few weeks earlier. The conversation up here has been so much around Manu Tuilagi for the last couple of weeks as a sort of the panacea to England's issues, that if they can get someone who can run straight and hard and over that gain line, they've got the ball players to play from that platform. Eddie was talking after the game about his vision to play a free style of rugby, to do away with formations, to do away with sort of the 1-3-3-1 type attacking system. How do you can you do that in the test level? How do you view the way that England's attack is set up at the moment, and perhaps why they can't penetrate defences in the way that Wales did when they were able to get some momentum in the game?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things to say here. One, I think Wales defended very smartly on the weekend. They got their wingers high on edge attacks, it's high risk, high reward. So it's when you're left with maybe a half field to attack or maybe a third field to attack, a lot of the time defences feel a bit vulnerable and you defend quite soft. When you've got, you know, the attacking prowess that England have, if you defend soft against that, then they're going to cut you to shreds. You know, the footwork of Marcus Smith, you know, the likes of Jack Noel, you know, Henry Slade, etc. And so Wales, not a gamble, I think it was a calculated gamble. It's something we did a long time under Sean Edwards, and now Wales are doing it. And the Gethin Jenkins is in that half field, really, really coming high, bringing the wingers and that one defender in from the edge, coming high. So Marcus Smith gets the ball, looks up,
doesn't really want to risk playing in those wider channels because that Welsh defence has kind of spooked them, if you say. And I thought the Welsh wingers and centres did a great job on the weekend doing that. So, you know, that they contained England in that regard. As regards to Manu, look, I'm a big believer as an attack, you need focal points in your attack. You know, people who can really sit defenders down and create space for others, or take two, three defenders with them. That doesn't always have to be in the midfield. It can be a really destructive back row ball carriers. It can be big wingers. You know, we saw how destructive Alex Cuthbert was with ball in hand. And again, Jack Noel plays a similar role for England, often popping up in the midfield. But when you've got someone like Manu in your team, you can build your attacking game around him, because, you know, when you're playing at the back of players or hitting players up, he's going to create space. Whether he carries, next phase is going to have, there's going to be space because he's going to take two, three defenders with him. If you use him as a decoy, he's going to create space because he's going to attract defenders. And when you haven't got that focal point, you're relying on pace, you're relying on footwork and passing ability of players. Now, when defences are so well coached in the international game, it's hard to break down defences if you don't have those focal points. That's pretty obvious. And, you know, that links then up to Eddie's point, who's talking about doing away with shape. Now defences are so well coached and how the rules allow for players to get over the ball, you know, and you've got some bloody good jacklers in the game at test level now. If you're not playing to shape and you don't resource rucks well in attack, you're going to lose all day long. You're going to lose all day long because you'll be looking at, you know, even if putting one player to a ruck nowadays, you're in trouble. You know, ball carrier plus one. You need ball carrier plus two at almost every ruck without fail. Otherwise, you're going to lose the ball in the contact area. So, yeah, you do need structure and shape at test level. That's the way it is. It's very hard to play this, you know, however Eddie Jones wants to suggest playing. You need some sort of shape. Otherwise, you're just not going to put any sort of phases together because defences are so well coached, if that makes sense.
Jamie, you played in at least two really, really world-class centre partnerships. O'Driscoll and yourself in South Africa and Jonathan Davis in hundreds of games with Wales. Do you think that it's still essential to have a kind of balance in midfield? Because England don't appear to be trying that at the moment.
I wouldn't say essential. I think it helps massively. And if you don't, I think you need to have it on the wing.
Yeah.
In some form or other. I think you need a power runner in your back line. That's the way I see the game. You know, whether that's a 12, 13, 14 or 11. And players that can really, really punch the line, pick good lines and physically dominate opponents because it gives you so much. You know, we talk about physical domination up front. As I said, with the way the amount of space now at test level on the park is very limited, the way defences are coached, you need players who can go through heavy traffic and give you momentum. It just puts you on the front foot. It makes life certainly a lot easier. And as you said, I think one of you guys alluded to it, that last 20 minutes when Wales just started just being a bit more basic with their attack and carrying with a bit more aggression, with a bit more intensity, their game fell into shape. They were finding soft edges with England. So, you know, the game, dress it up all you want. You have to go forward. And, you know, the simplest formula for doing that is having someone, you know, big players who can are smart, pick good lines and are going to win collisions.
Jamie, the next time we come back for a Six Nations round, it's Wales-France on that Friday night in a week or so's time. How do you think Wales can go about stopping the French? Because at the moment, they just look like they're unstoppable. How are they going to be the stick in the mud and stop the slam?
I haven't watched the Scotland-France game. I've only watched the highlights. I'm trying to work it out myself, actually, how Wales are going to kind of stifle this game plan. I think defensively, they have to take a few risks against France. They're not the sort of team you can defend softly against, because I think attack wise at the minute they're the best side in the championship, and so Wales are going to have to bring another level of line speed again, defend with their wingers high, and they'll be repping that for the next fortnight with Gethin as coach there, just trying to get as high as possible to put the likes of Fiku, Dante, these sorts of guys under pressure, because serious players. And just up front, keep the ball on the park, limit set piece with these guys again. You know, Wales try to do that against England, I think. And limit set piece, these guys get a rumble on in the lineup. That's the thing with France at the minute, they're an all-court team. Very hard to plan against, because you defend them well one aspect of the game, they'll come at you, and the other, they're very smart side, and defensively don't concede many, with obviously with Sean Edwards at the helm there. So serious team. I said before the tournament that I think a good tournament for Wales was if they won their home games. And they're 1 from 3, you know, I can't see them losing to Italy at home. So for me, this is now, obviously state the obvious, they've only got 2 games left, but this is a huge game for Wales. They're at home, it's a Friday night, they're against the favourites who are on for a slam, and you know, don't be surprised if Wales upset the odds. I mean, you know, France are the team to beat, but you know, as a Welshman, it's a massive game for the lads. You know, they've got 2 weeks leading, and you know, it's going to be arguably a career defining game.
Look, it's been great to talk to you, and sharp as a needle as ever. Thanks a million for talking to us. Really enjoyed it. Is it now Thomas you're going off to see to try and get him to sleep?
Well, Thomas went to sleep 3 hours ago, but no doubt the little bugger's going to wake up in an hour or two. we just let him cry out. But yeah, we got training tomorrow. Brumby's away this weekend. I think we got five or six games, and then we've got a bye week. I'm going to try and sneak down to Melbourne for the Grand Prix, so that's in that weekend off.
All right, okay.
You have such a boring life, Jamie, honestly.
Oh, so boring, mate. Well, literally, the beach was closed today. They put a little sign in the sand saying sharks sighted. Like, obviously, we had that catastrophe weeks ago. You know?
Yes, that'd be good enough for me, shark sighted. Jamie Roberts, thanks a million, and wish you all the best with Thomas, and also with the new arrival, and also with your Super Rugby career. Thank you so much.
Nice one. See you in the summer, guys.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, Alex, I just think that was wonderful talking to Jamie, and the insight, and the talk about the finger on the pulse. He immediately picked up something you'd already picked up about the World Cup final. I mean, or the World Cup, and it all depends on that. Yeah. It's a long way in the future, and Jamie was very, very anti this Eddie Jones philosophy.
He was, and he's right to be so. And I know you're not an enormous fan of nuance, Steve, but there is. I tried to write a piece about this a few weeks ago where I agreed with the need for England to evolve their squad. I mean, it was kind of hard not to. A year ago, they finished fifth. Things weren't working. There were players who he needed to turn to, and he is now turning to, in certain positions, a Dom Brandt, a Stewart, And they need time. They're not the finished article, but they're established already. I thought Don Brandt's performance on Saturday was his coming of age game for England at a test level. So that's where I disagree with your point, Steve, which is always to just pick the players for that game. However, the narrative of it's all about the World Cup, I couldn't agree more with what Jamie says. I think the changes that England made them a better team in the autumn. So that wasn't just picking youth for youth's sake. I think it improved the team. But the idea that you can try and sell out Twickenham, sell £200 tickets to benches, hospitality for games, which you're effectively telling people are just a stepping stone to something else, which they probably won't be at because not that many people can get to a World Cup, even in France. I completely disagree with it. I don't like the message. And I know people, personal friends and family, who will no longer go to Twickenham because they don't want to... They don't feel like they're buying tickets to an event that the head coach thinks is that big a deal.
I will add a nuance in there for you.
I
think that Alex Donbrandt has still got it all to do to prove himself as a number eight. May well do, and I think probably Harry Randall too. And also, I will add Smith to that. I think they're promising starts, but they've still got it all to do.
Of course they do. But all I mean is, I thought that Donbrandt showed in that game on Saturday that he has what it takes. None of them are the finished article. I'm absolutely not saying that. But I think Stewart, Smith and Donbrandt, for me, have all proven that from here they can build to become really good test players.
Well,
on the World Cup point, building to the World Cup, didn't South Africa prove last cycle that it was all a load of hooey? They were good for nine months. Razzie Erasmus came in 18 months, 2 years just before that World Cup. They were absolutely terrible in 2017, 2018. And then they won the Rugby Championship and six out of seven games at the World Cup, and that was enough. And that was it. They weren't building for this wider thing for 4, 8, 12 years.
And weirdly, which sort of contradicts the narrative from England, is that actually I think Eddie's probably just waiting for next summer. I think he's trying to get his chess pieces in position, and then he'll get them in camp for 3 months, and that's the point when he'll have maximum control of the England squad, and that's when I think he'll think he can turn them into a team that reaches the final. Because a lot of the stuff that goes on now, he sends them back to their clubs, they get injured, he doesn't have the control that he wants, and all of that kind of stuff. I actually think he's looking at players. You know, I was saying, I think we had this conversation, Will, at Twickenham, that it wouldn't surprise me at all if someone like Lewis Ludlow, who captained England last summer and is now not involved, is already penciled in to be part of a wider World Cup camp.
33-man squad,
as a great squad man, a leader, a very reliable, high-quality player.
Is that the new Mark Wilson character?
And everything else is just being built so that in that camp he can get everything ready, which contradicts the whole narrative of this is all part of a journey.
The other point, though, on that is, to be fair to him, it worked last time.
Yeah.
Like they got them in camp from about, so like the Premiership final was in June, and they almost the next day joined up and then went to the World Cup in September with lots of camps and going to Italy and going to Brighton and wherever else they went. And they did get better together, didn't they?
Yeah, of course.
And they found out that on the World Cup final day, they weren't ready for the World Cup in the scrummage, in their backup scrummage.
And the bus was late.
So all that stuff went to waste. Let me ask you a bit of a deeper question. This is as deep as... Do you remember Jacques Cousteau?
I do.
Because whenever Will does a deep dive, I always remember Jacques Cousteau and the Calypso, where I was in great danger from the sea creatures. That was Jacques Cousteau's...
Was it?
Yeah.
Was he from Sri Lanka or...?
Yeah. There was a certain atmosphere at Twickenham where, first of all, it was slightly grim because of the tension. I got some tickets for some people, and very, very grateful they were, and had a great time. But this drinking thing, it was just a plague, absolute plague of people getting up. I'm not attacking the RFU here because they need to get some money, but international rugby has become massive. It's become overblown, and there are too many games. And it is like a factory for gathering in money. On the other hand, on Sunday, I wasn't actually at Franklin's Gardens, but we saw a delightful game played in the great spirit, way more attacking rugby than England and Wales had dreamt of, and just a terrific game. Which of those two was more akin with what rugby's supposed to be?
Yeah, I didn't see the Franklin's Garden, the Northampton game, but I read a lot about it and certainly saw a lot of the reaction to what a great game it was. I will say, to not be completely negative about Twickenham and England, that it was a rousing atmosphere, and I thought there was a sense of joy about being back at big stadiums. And I know that this is a theme that we've talked about a lot, and it was the first Six Nations game with a full crowd at Twickenham for a couple of years, and it felt like the crowd were desperate to get engaged in it. They were loud when they needed to be, even at the end when England were kind of trying to basically hang on. They stirred again,
yeah.
And I thought Twickenham can take time; can be like a huge tanker. It can take time for an atmosphere to build there, partly because, as you say, Steve, there's a lot of people distracted and elsewhere. But actually, it was a stirring place at times, and that was that alone was quite a joyful thing for me. And I do think that, you know, they were invested and they were desperate for something. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about that with Jamie and the attacking rugby and like. They've been sold this idea of what their team will be, and it's just not clicking. There are flashes of it where Marcus Smith is finding space where there is no space with that wonderful step and kick that he does and offload. But the good things aren't attached to the other good things. That there are bits and pieces team at the moment. I will say though, they won the game, and you don't have to win games by scoring tries from 60 metres out. You don't have to win games by being flash. They won the game. They opened a 17-point lead because they put pressure on defensively and Marcus Smith kicked goals, 3-6-9-12. Classic way of building a scoreboard. They didn't convert their pressure into big points, but they did build a score. And you can't criticise them for doing that. That's a perfectly legitimate way of building a score. It's just that the vision they're being sold, I don't think, is quite matching up with what they're seeing on
the
field.
At the end of the next few weeks, when you've raced around this week trying to get some more stories, stats, etc., then you go to Cardiff on a Friday if you're going and get back at the early hours, then you whiz back to Twickenham. You either do the inquest or the glory Eddie, then you got to. We're all off to France for a night game. Would you be looking forward then to a rest or at least to go to a decent, friendly club game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Premiership's been awesome, hasn't it? I mean, yeah. We look the other way at this time of year because we have to, because that's the job. But, I mean, teams like London Irish just look like an absolute joy. Like that Northampton, they're born to play, Quins. And like Alex and I, coming back to England, were having this conversation on the phone on Sunday when we're sort of discussing what to put in the sort of big review piece. And I genuinely think that England have got a really likeable team at the moment, a bit like the football side, who've totally changed the narrative of the last decades, where they seem really relatable, they're really diverse, they seem like a really good group of lads. And as you were saying, Alex, I think there's a genuine will for them to do well at the stadium, but then whether it needs to their performances need to reflect their character, I don't feel like it does quite at the moment. They seem to be this team that they could, as I was saying earlier, burst into life, and they just still are a bit areas of grey in it.
Let me have the last nuance on this game before we go on, Alex. Is England rugby team the least relatable sports team I've ever come across in any sport?
I really don't agree with that. Why would you say that?
Well, the media access is pathetic. People say, why don't you go to press conferences? Because I don't want to sit 49th in line and get some quotes that other people's going to use, then being told, sorry, it's embargoed, and you're going to use it a week on Tuesday.
I think, though, that the players, if you talk to people like Ellis Genge and Carl Sinclair and guys like Smith and Don Brandt, and they're really interesting and diverse and exciting characters who've got great backstories, and I feel like that is being reflected, and England still can do better to reflect that.
What aspect of their backstories didn't emerge 5 years ago or more?
Well,
the first backstory with Carl Sinclair, and I don't normally do this, was me When I sat with him at Guildford Donkeys years ago when he was a Queen's Reserve. Since then, everybody's recycled it, as I've recycled other backstories. This is the least... To compare them with the England football team, Gareth Southgate. Southgate and Eddie Jones, you have got chalk and cheese, you've got Jesus and Beelzebub.
I don't know if it's got anything to do with Eddie Jones, really. I just think that confident...
Who's setting all the agenda?
Fun.
Who is setting the agenda?
Yeah, I know, but when
on
you
and off
see...
the field. And actually, he's not setting the agenda. He's making the complete balls up of it.
But like the recent interviews I've done with people like Gabe O'Gray and Paolo Dogwo, they seem... They're just interesting lads. And
but that's
I would
out of England.
To show that on the field in their performances. That's all I'm... That was the point I was trying to make.
There is no joy in this England team.
But there could be. That's what I'm saying. Well, there could be.
Maybe there could be.
But there was quite a lot of joy when they beat South Africa. That was pretty
on
joyful.
On the final whistle.
Raffy Quirk. Yeah, but they beat the world champions.
it is a joyless thing. And you look at on the Sunday Times, on the Times website, and you look at reactions. I've read them. There was about 800 to one match report alone, and they have definitely, categorically turned against Eddie. You read it absolutely definitely.
I don't think we're disagreeing on the fact that there's loads more that
England
can
are.
Do. All right, are we? Okay. Is that the nuance for the day?
That's the nuance. There's certainly no nuance in France. No nuance in the way they're playing. There is a nuance because they're playing in all different styles to suit the occasion on the field, which is Eddie's big goal, which he's never achieved and never will. The French pack, you'd love their big forwards, huge forwards, I should say, but also mobile. Willemse, Cyril Bailly, these guys. But you'd also love the whole sweep of the way they play.
Yeah. Absolutely, and we had Sean Edwards on, didn't we, a few weeks ago, talking about how much he loves some of their guys, and they're not always the biggest guys, but they've got that toughness, but they've got adventure, that freedom to play, that they back themselves, they back their skills, they've got the power, they've got the vision, it's just a thrill to watch them, but it's not baseless, that's the thing, it's founded upon... upon discipline and a set piece and defence, which and then upon that they then go and play. And I think, as we said, as Will said to Jamie, how do you stop them? And at the moment within the Six Nations, Ireland would have been the closest, and they couldn't do it.
One thing where Wales will really struggle, and the England didn't make them struggle. Wales have got a total dearth of front row forwards who can actually play. Play around the field like Bailly, like Sinclair, like Genge to a certain extent. That Furlong, they haven't got those, and that is when they will be punished. But Will, we were talking to Jamie about partnerships himself and Brian O'Driscoll, and then we're talking about Manu because we want him to be in the partnership. But Jonathan Danti, Gael Fico is sometimes out on the wing, but Fico Danti, is that not a classic partnership? I mean, Vakatawa is not even fit, but is that not a classic? Balanced partnership.
They look really good. And it was interesting. We were all sitting at Twickenham watching Scotland-France on the tellies in the press box. And you should have seen Stuart Barnes if you weren't there. He's just obsessed with Danti. Thinks he's like the god of every week. It's amazing. But I love watching the guys who look like they shouldn't be able to throw ridiculous offloads. Like, again, for the Monday Maul, I've had a little bit of a look at Cyril Bailly. And the one offload that he gave for Mo Farna's try cut out six Scottish defenders with the same pass. They honeypotted around him so much, and he flicked one out the back, and it's just amazing. I cannot wait. Like, we're talking about joy. Whatever the situation is with England, we're going to be lucky enough to all be at the Stade de France on that final day. And to be honest, I kind of hope that they're on for a Grand Slam, because that is going to be amazing. Like, Saturday night, 9 p.m. kickoff in Paris. That could be unbelievable, couldn't it? It'd be great fun.
It would be the most unbelievable deadline we've ever had. You're right. Alex, Will made a good point there. If you're a rugby person and follower, even if you're kind of slightly biased towards one country, wouldn't it be lovely if they do win a classic Grand Slam?
Yeah, it would. No, it would, because it's the sign of a classic team. You know, they've only been 16 is it in ever Grand Slams. You have to be. You don't fluke a Grand Slam. Mm. You know, you can win a title on points difference or bonus points. Yeah, and there have been title winners who in years that where it could have gone either way. You don't fluke a slam. Mm. And this team and the way they play will, if they win a slam, they will have won it in the way you want a team to win a Grand Slam. And so I agree with Will. If it's on the line on that Saturday night, I'm not supporting them, but it would be. Mm. If they go and do it, they will have done it in the perfect way you'd like to see a team win a slam.
Steve, on that, just quickly, you've seen far more slams than us. If France were to wipe the floor with Wales and then do the job against England, would that be one of the more dominant tournaments you've seen? Like, Wales in 05 wasn't dominant, but they played amazing rugby, didn't they? What other slams
Wales were dominant in the 70s. I think there was either one or two slams where they were dominant. Never looked like losing any of them. Mm. But I don't think I've ever seen anyone who this France team, if they keep going, it could easily be the best Grand Slam team or the best European team we've seen, because Wales. When they went away from the comfort zone of the Six Nations or Five Nations, were badly beaten in New Zealand. Although to be fair, the core of the team did win the 71 Lions. I don't think this French team could go anywhere and be badly beaten by anyone at any time.
What about the 0-3 England slam? That was unbelievably dominant.
That was
Ireland
unbelievably
game.
Dominant, and they would certainly. Do you know what the worst thing that 0-3 Grand Slam did was to have the World Cup coming after it. If that had stood alone, they were absolutely brilliant. England have never played so well as they did against Ireland in the Grand Slam game. Absolutely brilliant. Matt Dawson, you may not like him or you may love him, but he was just out of this world.
And it feels like this is brewing as well in France. Like it's been 10 years, I think, since they won a title. So a Grand Slam would be
12
years since they won a title. A Grand Slam would be like the promised land to them. And they would have done it if they hadn't had Aouas sent off in Scotland and lost that game a couple of years ago. It feels like it's just building for them.
Mm. Let's just move on now.
Steve, you didn't notice my Bruce Springsteen song title.
What was it?
Promised Land.
Sorry, I missed that, mate.
I literally engineered that entire answer so I could get your Bruce Springsteen song title in.
Okay, what's the first line of it?
Can you sing it for us, Steve? Go on.
It's been 12 years since we won a slam.
No, it's Rattlesnake Speedway in the Utah Desert. Is the first line.
Fair play.
just one quick line. Poor old Nika Amashukeli was really under pressure. He had to send off three Italians. I wonder would he have sent off three Irishmen if the offences had been the other way. But again, another huge embarrassment for Italy.
Well, yeah, sort of. Personally, I thought the referee got all the key decisions right. I mean,
yes,
what a hellish game for your first Six Nations match. Yeah. He did pretty well, I thought, actually. And it's not his fault that the law that forced Italy to go from 15 men to 13 men in the stroke of one decision. That's not his fault. It's a bit of a mad law, that one. I think he actually had a good game, but you do start feeling a bit sorry for Italy, don't you? I mean, the guy gets injured, the hooker, then the replacement gets a red card, probably justifiably, and then there's this like tiny nuance of a law that damages them even further. And in 95% of occasions, it's meant to stop people cheating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the 5% where they weren't trying, it duffs them up, doesn't it?
Alex, I'll let you...
Why can... I know that there are specific skills, break foot. You are supposed to hook. You've got to put your foot out to hook the ball, even if the ball just bounces off your heel. But is it so specialist that a tight head prop couldn't go and play hooker in a test match scrum?
The bloke who came on, he was quite good at throwing in.
Inside was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah. They're so worried about, you know, someone goes down and they break their neck or something like that. let's be fair, it's the Badlands, the front row. Scrum. Yeah. It's just one more thing, Alex, before we go on to club very quickly. England, Ireland. Ireland narrow favourites, but England could really, really put themselves on the map in that game.
Well, they'll need to. I mean, if they don't, then they're looking at another really poor championship. Because they have to go to France and try and win in France to get a third win. Last year they finished fifth with two wins. It's the biggest test. I mean, they came through that South Africa game and passed a ferocious test in that second half against the Springboks. And you thought that's the making of this team. And since then they've gone backwards. This feels now, a year on from England finishing fifth, like Ireland is the test of this whole new project that Eddie Jones keeps talking Absolutely. About. If they lose it, then, I mean, the questions become incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay, lads, thank you very much for that. Very eloquent all round on the Six Nations. We're now going over to Jess. It was a huge weekend in the Premier 15s. Jess.
Saracens confirmed their place in the Premier 15's playoffs as they extended their lead at the top of the table to 6 points with 3 games remaining of the regular season. They beat Bristol Bears in a top of the table clash that finished almost 3 hours after it began. That's because the game was suspended for 35 minutes while medics attended to Georgia Evans, the Saracens player who sustained a painful looking injury to her arm and shoulder. Despite the lengthy delay as the severity of Evans' injury became more clear, the teams returned to the pitch for a show-stopping end to round 15. Second half tries came from Bristol's Leanne Infante, Saracens' Poppy Cleal and Bristol's Alicia Butchers before Bristol set up a strong maul just shy of the try line and prop Sarah Byrne managed to touch the ball down for a 79th minute try. Despite the conversion being scored quickly by Amber Reid to put Bristol just 4 points behind Saracens with one last play of the game, there was confusion about the time left on the clock and Bristol tapped the ball down in their in-goal area to accidentally end the game with Saracens in the lead 30-26. Of course, we wish George Evans a speedy recovery. On Saturday, Harlequins took second place following their 48-5 win against DMP Durham Sharks, but Bristol's losing bonus points mean Harlequins now move back to third place. Exeter kept up the pressure to keep their place in the top four with a convincing 67 win against Worcester Warriors. Loughborough Lightning saw the return of Emily Scarrett, the 2019 World Rugby Player of the Year, who's not played since breaking her leg 3 minutes into the first game of this season back in September. Scarrett came onto the pitch in the 65th minute and the side managed a 19-all draw with Gloucester Hartbury. Finally, in Sale, the battle of Wasps versus Sharks was settled as Wasps pulled away for a convincing 53-14 win against Sale Sharks. So, the scores from round 15 are DMP Durham Sharks 5, Harlequins 48, Exeter Chiefs 60, Worcester Warriors 7, Loughborough Lightning 19, Gloucester Hartbury 19, Sale Sharks 14, Wasps 53, and finally, Bristol Bears 26, Saracens 30.
Thank you very much, Jess. So, before we go on to our God, Goddess or Devil of the Week, very, very important that we mention the RFU Championship. It's been beleaguered, underfunded, but all the teams have come through and played all their games. And what do you know? The climax is excellent. On Saturday, Ealing or Doncaster went to Ealing and won 25-17, which has really put the cat amongst the pigeons. Doncaster, great club. Now they've got a great chance of actually finishing top and therefore a great chance of going up. There are 4 teams left in it. Ealing, Doncaster, Cornish Pirates and Jersey had a great game on the weekend. So this top four has really broken away and it has put pressure on all those who want the championship to be devalued and that to have joke and Premiership second teams in it.
But Pirates have got to play both Ealing and Doncaster, I think.
Yeah, Pirates have to play Ealing and Doncaster. They have to go to Doncaster. And I think they are at home to Ealing. So that'll be worth watching.
But only 2 teams have applied to come up.
Yeah.
So yeah. Doncaster and Ealing are the two that have applied to come up.
Okay, we're up to God, Goddess or Devil. Will.
We mentioned him before, and I think he's possibly my player of the tournament so far as well, but I can't look beyond Cyril Bailly. We actually, on our little Ruck podcast group, we had a specific request from Al Dimmock that we had to get him in. So there you go, Al. That's for you.
Well, I think, do we have any free will in this, or are we all going to go for Cyril Bailly? Alex?
Well, I certainly heartily endorse that nomination. I thought he was brilliant. He has been all tournament, and he was in the autumn. What a player. I'm going to give a mention to Ben Youngs. Another player who's been maligned a lot, and yet he's won 115 test caps. He's seen off, I think, about 120 England players have been capped since his debut. 11 other scrum halves have won a cap since his debut, and he's still sort of seeing them all off. And he actually came on and played really, really well, helped control things when England were losing their heads a bit. And whether you think he should be starting for England or not, to win 115 test caps in England is remarkable. There are other nations who've had a lot of centurions. The Wallabies, the All Blacks had a lot of test centurions. Wales, England have only had two, and one of them is Ben Youngs. And so he gets my nomination.
Both those are incredibly noble, and I was going to go to Paul Willemse, because I think he's what locks always used to be, as well as what they are in these days. But I have to say that Ben Youngs is such a lovely bloke. I'm going to go against the express advice of our propping experts, and I'm going to go for Ben Youngs too. So I think by a majority of 2-1, very, very close, Ben Youngs is our God of the Week. Thanks a million for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks to Al, and thanks to Will and Jamie. We'll all be back next week. There'll be a raft of other stuff we have to get our heads around, and let's hope there's some joy in it along the way.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.